Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. On today's episode, we sat down with Anthony Truchard. These Chardonnays and Pinots have always been top of the line for me, but he also came to play with some Cabs, Cab Franc, Merlot, and Roussan. These wines are incredible. It was a great conversation, and we did a tasting after that absolutely crushed. It was a great conversation. I hope that you enjoy it just as much as we enjoyed doing it. Don't forget, whatever platform you're listening to us on, throw us a like and tell us what you think. Cheers.
Are you awake?
I'm awake. Are you? I'm ready to go.
Hey, Anthony. We have Anthony here.
How long have you been in the market?
I got here on Monday, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been down in like Venice and Sarasota and kind of just cruising up the West Coast.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. How long are you going to be here?
I'm heading down to Miami tomorrow. My wife and children came with me, and my wife is from Miami.
That's fun.
Yeah, so it's kind of a quasi-family trip, quasi-work trip, sharing wine with people.
Nice.
Having fun.
Work it all into one. It's Anthony Truchard, by the way, of Truchard Winery, so we... it's not Anthony Hendricks of Hendricks Winery, because you don't have one yet.
No, because he makes gin.
Oh, that would be sweet.
Yeah. Are you going to get a chance to swing by and see Virginia at the Breakers?
I don't know on this trip. I've done some events with her in the past. So.
Yeah. I feel like that's a prime spot for your wines. Your wines, for me, it's funny, actually, as I don't know, as odd as this might seem to you, for years, I've always carried the Chard on the list, and then I put the Pinot on a few of my wine lists. I wasn't even really aware that you guys did a Cab or some of these other varietals.
Yeah,
I was excited to see a Roussan. I had no idea.
Yeah, we're one of the more diverse vineyards in Napa Valley. You know, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Cabernet are kind of our flagships, and that's like 80% of our production. But because our property is so big, we do a lot of other varieties, like Roussan. We do a little Tempranillo, Syrah, some fun stuff that... Yeah, a lot of these are half an acre and a half. The Roussan's about 4 acres.
Wow.
But yeah, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Cabernet are major plantings, and that's kind of what's widely in distribution. But because my wife is from Miami and from Florida, they have a few wines here that we don't have in other markets.
Huh. That's awesome. And are all of those coming out of Carneros?
Yeah, everything's estate. Everything's grown within a mile of the winery itself.
Wow.
One of the unique things about the property is we're the northeasternmost vineyard in Carneros, which probably doesn't mean all that much, except it's right where Carneros kind of transitions into Mount Veeder. So there's a fault line that runs through our property and really changes the soil types from like classic Carneros, which is more clay, marine sediment, really kind of dense, great for Chardonnays, Merlots, and Pinot Noirs. Mm-hmm. The northern part of our property, really rocky, porous, gravelly, great for like Cabernets, Syrahs, Roussans, Tempranillos, and stuff, some of those later ripening varieties.
That's awesome. I'm very excited to try it. I know I've seen some Cabernet, I've seen some Tempranillo out of like the Carneros area, but it's not a ton that I'm familiar with.
No, honestly, I think only ourselves. Larry Hyde is the vineyard right south of us, and Paul Hobbs buys from there, and then... Hudson Vineyards is starting to plant some. But one is the soils in that northern Carneros are a little bit better drained. Cabernet doesn't like to have what they call wet feet. It doesn't want water around the roots. So you really need to be in kind of those northern hills of Carneros. And then also, we're kind of out of that wind tunnel, so we get some more warmth. They kind of nickname for our area is kind of the banana belt of the Carneros because, you know, we're generally warmer out of that kind of wind path. And so we can ripen some of those later varieties like Syrahs and Cabernets.
Is that pushing into Mount Veeder, like you said? Is it just more volcanic soils?
Yeah,
right,
it's just more volcanic soils there and better drained. And then, again, also a lot of pretty steep, aggressive hills that are all south-southwest facing. So kind of like that roasted slope. We're getting that sun beating down on it, and that actually helps ripen it as well.
That's perfect for the Syrah.
Farther
right?
north, like, than Brown Ranch or the Sinsky House?
So we're... Both of those are our neighbors right there. So our property goes right up to Brown Ranch. We're right north of that. But even the Cabernet, we only really planted on the north sides of our property. Our property is about 2 miles. We have about 400 acres total, so pretty large property. And then we're a little like northeast of
Sinsky. It is so beautiful there. It's one of the, I love that area.
Yeah, we hear that all the time. Like people, you know, we don't have any signs up, you know, so you drive right through our property. One of the major roads there is Old Sonoma Road.
Yeah.
And people always say, hey, that's one of our favorite parts of Napa. Like, you leave the city and you're kind of just driving through these vineyards and old oaks. And, yeah, that's like right through the center of our property.
And the hills are just all, you know, there's vineyards on all the hills. It's just, it's beautiful. I've taken some great photos from on top of some of those hills there.
You got to share some of these photos.
Oh, gosh, they're so good. Maybe we'll try to give you some and you can put them
on. Yeah, we'll post them up. Here, cheers. We're going to start off with this Chardonnay. Great introduction to your wines. I've had this on many of my wine lists. I think it's a very nice complimentary wine to food. Mm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, no, Chardonnay, when my father first came to Canaries in the 70s, not a lot of people were growing grapes down in that area. Most people are looking at like Rutherford, Oakville. But to be honest, you know, he had just come from Texas and, you know, kind of wanted to get into the wine industry. Really couldn't afford Rutherford or Oakville. So we were one of the early people to settle down in Canaries. And, you know, my father didn't know a lot about grapes, to be honest. Mm-hmm. He learned a lot over the last 50 years. But people told him, you know, it's maybe a little too cool down there. You should plant Chardonnay and Pinot because they, you know, those grapes ripen in a cooler area. You know, fast forward 40 years, and this is kind of like the premier spot in Napa Valley for Chardonnay. The benefits of Canaries, we're about 5 to 10 degrees cooler, so those cool breezes come in and give the Chardonnay a nice minerality, a nice freshness to it. You know, what the winemaker has been trying to achieve with this is get all that richness that you expect out of a California Chardonnay. You know, we get sunshine pretty much every afternoon, and then in the mornings we get that fog that rolls in, so you kind of get this yin-yang of a richness and acidity. Like all of our wines, because, you know, everything we do is all estate, meaning we grow our own grapes, so we don't want to put a lot of oak on our wines. Our emphasis is the fruit, the farming, the location, the terroir, and so we feel like if you put too much oak on it, you're kind of hiding some of that behind the oak. And so this is barrel aged, but it's only about 30% new. Mm. And so people ask, like, why is that important? It's kind of like when you're steeping tea, you know, that first time you put the tea bag in, you get a lot of extraction. After 2 or 3 years, the barrels are neutral. You still get the benefit of that oxygen integrating with the fruit, but you don't get that real heavy oaky flavor.
I like that. The oak is definitely present there, but it doesn't tell the story. And it also... butter doesn't tell the story. You're not getting a ton of that mallow. It is definitely fruit. It's very expressive of the terroir. You can tell that it's definitely New World. It's definitely California. There's no hiding from that.
Yeah, we got a lot of sunshine out there.
Right. And there's a little bit of alcohol to it. I didn't see the bottle, but you're probably about 14, I would imagine.
Yeah, about
14.1, right? 14.1. So it's uniquely American for sure, but it's not what you think of when you think of big...
Well, it's
California.
Balanced. It's well balanced.
Absolutely.
You know, you still get those oaky notes, but you still have that minerality there. It's still there. There's acidity there. Like, you definitely get that acidity on the back end.
Yeah,
on the back end. Yeah.
I like it. It kind of reminds me, you know, that little Meganoshuzé that we do so
mm-hmm.
well with.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice bridge from old to New World. It kind of, that's where this falls in line for me. It's a very nice food wine for sure.
Yeah.
It plays really well.
I mean, I could just. To be honest with you, I could just take this to the beach and just drink it down. I mean,
exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. Nice cold Chardonnay.
Yeah. Especially our weather right now, where in California, you guys are getting kind of pounded with some cold weather.
I know. I just got pictures. We got more snow in Napa this week than I think we've ever in my lifetime.
It's crazy.
And I'm like, damn, I missed it. I'm out here, like, everybody's texting me, how's the snow? And I'm like... Well, the sand in Florida is nice.
And hot. It's
yeah,
hot
we didn't get yeah, we didn't get snow on our property. We're lower elevations, but up in not the Mayacamas, but the Baca Mountain Range got a lot of snow. I mean, when we say a lot, it's like, you know, half an inch, but
still,
you can see it. You can see it, which is kind of not normal in Napa. Usually, you know, maybe once every 4 or 5 years you get a little dusting, and this is definitely more than that.
We want this over by March, right? I mean, we want this done.
Yeah, actually by about mid-March is when we start worrying about frost, because that's when the vines start, you know, with bud break happens and those little buds start pushing. And so as soon as that happens, if you get days under 32, you can risk damaging the vines and then setting back the crop and having some low yields. We had a little bit of that in last year in 2022 with our Chardonnay. The Chardonnay, we want to preserve that acidity, so we put it in the cooler spots, which is great, but it also buds out a little earlier, so we sometimes have trouble with frost.
And with the reds, is that going to affect the reds much too? Like when you talk about Pinot Noir being in that kind of in that same area, right? I mean, you're planted in that same area.
Yeah. We, you know, we have just a little bit more. Our Pinot Noir is a little bit more on hillsides. We don't quite have it down in the valley like we have the Chardonnay. And so we definitely have more issues with frost with our Chardonnay.
With the shards.
So what is the state of the vineyard now? I know you said that your dad came over, what, 50 years ago?
Yep.
It's all family run. It's a state fruit. Everything's a state fruit. I didn't understand that, or I didn't know that as well. That's a beautiful thing. Where is the transition now? Is your father still around?
Yeah, so, you know, we're big farmers. My father, we started with 20 acres in 1974, and, you know, kept buying neighboring properties and expanded out. And his passion's always been farming. We actually sell 80% of our grapes to other wineries. So, you know, we sell grapes to, like, ZD and Frog's Leap and a lot of other great wineries. And I, we started making wine about 35 years ago, kind of in that grower champagne method of like, hey, we sold to some of these big houses like Duckhorn, but we also want to make a little bit of wine that, you know, it's not blended from Calistoga to Canaries, like, you know, more location based. And so we started the winery in 1989, and the winery continued to grow. But about by 2005, I came back to manage the winery portion of the business because my father was, you know, he didn't want to come out to Sarasota and sell wine.
Right.
He wanted to be out on his tractor. And so I managed the more of the winery side and the business side of it, and he's out there having fun on his tractor.
That's great.
I don't blame him. I mean, that'd be me too.
Everybody gets into the wine business and they're like, oh, the wine business is great. And then everybody's like, oh, I want to make wine. And then after, you know, being in the wine business for a little while, everybody's like, the growing's the fun part. That's where all the magic really happens. You can't make good wine without good grapes.
Yeah,
and, you know, you got to start there. And, you know, it's great just being outside and seeing where it goes. And you
know. So he comes over, doesn't know a ton about the wine industry. He, you know, he had to be told that maybe Chardonnay and Pinot is the greatest to grow in this area. What does he, how does he go about getting vines? Does he, is there particular clones or how does he go about that? Does he hire someone that helps him out or?
Well, so a few things, if multifaceted question, so a few things happened with that. So kind of a little brief history of like why he decided just to dive into the wine industry without a lot of knowledge is, my great-grandfather was growing grapes in France back in the 1800s, and they came over from France during phylloxera. You know, their vineyards were failing, so they came to America, made a little money with doing a shipping company, and decided to start another winery in Houston, Texas. That kind of failed, but my father grew up on that property, and so they had the old abandoned vines there. The old winery was there. I mean, as a kid, I'd go back and see all the old, you know, press and the old barrels, and so it kind of had this family nostalgia of like, hey, our family's been in the wine industry. And my father loved farming. That was kind of his passion. He joined the army to get off the farm life, but when he got to California, he was like, damn, they're doing grapes out here and there. It actually seems to be working. Maybe we should try again. So he got into the business because he loved farming and he kind of had that family tradition. We luckily had a neighbor, Canaries Creek Winery, that was doing a lot of experiments with different clonal selections. And they were also looking for grapes from the Canaries AVA because they had a pond, a water source. And that was one of the big issues of why people weren't going to Canaries. And so he basically said, if you plant it, I'll buy anything you guys plant. And so he really helped. His name was Francis Mahoney, and he really helped kind of guide my father in those first early years.
That's awesome.
And picking the right clones and for that.
Exactly,
for that
picking the right clones. So like on the Pinot that we're trying right now, we just transitioned over. This has got some of those old heritage clones. We use, so this actually has some of those original vines that we planted back in 74, some old Martini clone. And, yeah, those give them some really nice kind of aromatics. You got this nice, almost like rhubarb pomegranate thing going on. Yeah, I just love the aromatics on this Pinot. To me, a truly great wine is one that you can just sit back and smell for a little while, and you keep getting different nuances, and you kind of get a little bit of, like, cardamom. And
light, cinnamon. Medium toast, or?
Medium. On the Pinot, is mostly medium, medium plus.
Medium plus.
The Chardonnay probably has a little bit more heavy toast barrels and medium plus. But yeah, the Pinot, definitely a little.
Man, and it's really shining through. Yeah. The Pinot, like that's the thing I love about this, is this is Pinot.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I mean.
Yeah, we're very traditional. Yeah. And the Pinot is very, because of those old heritage clones, like everybody, we experimented with some of those Dijon clones that were really getting popular in the 90s for Pinot Noir. But, you know, Canaries is probably one of the warmer areas to grow Pinot. And so those Dijon clones in our opinion, didn't work as well. And we still have some, and there's still some in this, because it's, once you plant it, it's kind of a chain, pain to switch over. But when we're doing our new stuff, we're going back to those old heritage clones. The Dijon clones just seem to get a little bit, kind of lose their acid, get a little heavy and dark. And, you know, we make 12 different wines, so we want our Pinot to taste like traditional Pinot. Mm.
Do you do more than just one Pinot at the winery? Like
we
you do.
So we do. This is what we're tasting now is our estate Pinot, right. And this is from like 11 different blocks on the estate. The property itself is a little more like a mosaic, where you're not just like 40 acres of Chardonnay here next to 30 acres of Pinot. It's more like the hill is breaking east, so we'll plant Pinot, so it gets the morning sun, and now it's going to the west, so we're going to get Cabernet or Cabernet Franc there to get warmer, and so. So this estate Pinot is from like 11 different sections. We also do an old block Pinot, which is this. Some of that old block is in this that was planted in 74, but also we do like a single bottling of just from those old, you know, 48-year-old vines.
What is the production on that?
That's about 200 to 300 cases each year.
Wow.
We get really small yields. It's about half a ton per acre. Every year, one of the reasons we actually started making the wine, because every year we're like, we're going to take this block out because it's not really financially viable to, you know, keep growing at half a ton per acre. Then we taste the wine and like, the wine's damn good. So we're like, well, you know, we can make it's not a reserve, but we single site selection from this, and, you know, kind of charge a little more to, you know, justify keeping these old vines because right. The quality is there. But it was just like when you know, we're normally getting two and a half tons per acre, and when you're getting half a ton per acre, it's like a little subsidy is needed.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's all, I think we all like, you know, like your business is farming, right? And,
yep.
and then, but you know, everybody has to make money, right? You still yep. got to send your kids to school. You still have to pay for new, maybe vineyard sites and stuff like that, where, you know, we're kind of like, you know, we're selling wine also to do the same thing.
Yep.
You know, we just don't farm,
yep.
you know, you're in a situation where weather can be an yeah. enemy or a savior, right?
So, yeah. Trust us. The last couple of years have been pretty challenging, between, you know, wildfires in 2020, mm-hmm. Drought in 2021, we have a little frost in 2022. Every year, you never know what's going to happen. But so far, everything looks good. We've gotten a lot of rain in Napa in the last, you know, 2.5 months. So all of our reservoirs are full. The water situation looks good. So we're hoping for a nice quasi-warm spring and then mm-hmm. Sail into harvest.
I love those conversations because I think sometimes, at least our listeners, and I guess everyone in general, if you're not in the industry, people have a hard time understanding what the cost analysis is of a bottle of wine. Why does one producer have a $20 bottle and another one has a $25 one,
yep.
and someone else right down the road has a $50 one, right? And there's a lot of factors that go into this. And like you said, weather is a huge one. That's a very big factor. But every down to the detail, I mean, even down to the corks that go into
yep.
it, I mean, everything has a cost, and that comes into it big time, like tenfold when it comes to making your own wine and farming.
Is there anything in that part of the business recently within the last year or two with, you know, we hear shipping and,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like
glass has
stuff.
Been definitely been our biggest like cost of increases, like it's almost doubled in the last, you know, 3 years. Everything's gotten a little more expensive, but glass is the one that's gotten probably not prohibitively expensive, but that's definitely,
and harder to get, yeah. I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of our things that we're really lucky about is, you know, we bought a lot of our property in the 70s and the 80s when Napa was relatively affordable. And yeah, now if we were, you know, coming into Napa tonight, and we couldn't afford 400 acres, but even if we were buying 20 or 30 acres, yeah, we'd have to charge different prices for our wines because we'd have to, you know, justify the cost of the property. But now, you know, we pretty much have the property paid off, so we're able to produce these, you know, great wines. We sell 80% of our grapes, so that kind of, you know, pays for all the farming, and so we're able to produce some Napa Valley quality wines at prices you really haven't seen in, you know, a decade or two.
Right.
I mean, I go back and think about, like, the guy who says, you know, we make 5 barrels, and that's why this wine is, you
yep.
know, $350. Well, and they just bought the property, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep.
You know, that's why it's $350.
Right.
You know? I know. It is. It's a challenge. I mean, Napa's still making great wines, and there's a reason the land is so expensive because it's one of the best places to make wine. But it, you know, it does mean the wines are going to cost more.
I think the nice part about you, though, you already got your, your property, and that, exactly. And these wines are tasting great. I'm very excited. All of them so far have just blown my doors off here. I'm kind of looking forward to this next.
Well, I'm looking forward to this too. I haven't got a chance to try it yet. I'm really looking forward to tasting that Roussan later.
I like the idea too, Carneros Merlot. You know, I think some years ago, I don't know if it was Chalon made one, or maybe Artesa made one.
Yeah,
because Artesa sits right.
Kind of. We're not that far. We're probably about 4 miles northeast of Artesa.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's parts of our property where you can see Artesa and Domaine Carneros and all those kind of hillside vineyards, because we're kind of rolling hills, and I mean there's parts of our property that you can look over the bay and see San Francisco and all that. Going to the Cabernet, I mean, like you were saying, there's not a lot of Cabernet grown in Carneros, and part of maybe my dad was naive when he first bought property in Napa, because there wasn't a Carneros AVA. We're wholly within Napa Valley, and all he knew about Napa was, hey, this is where Cabernet grows. So he was like, well, I'm going to plant some Cabernet. And it took us some years to figure out where on the property. As I mentioned, there's a fault line that runs through, which really dramatically changes the soils, that gives us more kind of mountain-like soils rather than seabed soils. And that's important. Then also, that sun exposure, getting that warm afternoon sun as opposed to, being on the valley floor or, tucked in a east-facing valley. And then, we also blend in some Cabernet Franc that ripens a little earlier, so that kind of gives it this uplifted violet tones. A little Petit Verdot and Malbec are blended in as well. But, all of our wines, and you kind of said it first with the Chardonnay, that kind of bridge old world, new world. Being down in Canaries, we're kind of like, Napa Valley meets France in a way. It's like we're one of the cooler areas doing it. But, most of our regions are warmer than the regions in France.
Do you have a hard time, I guess, do you have a hard time ripening that cab where you're
not
at?
Not in normal years. Okay. There are, like I said, we're probably more parallel with Bordeaux, where there actually are vintages. There's a long mantra forever that Napa Valley didn't have vintages. And then that's kind of changed a little bit. I think, without being too controversial, the weather's gotten a little more erratic in California. And so, we have had some years that, we've had really wet, cold vintages and things that we traditionally didn't have. But on a normal year, we don't have problems ripening it, but we do pick it pretty late, up until end of October, into November sometimes.
Jeez. It seems like, who's your winemaker?
So we've had three winemakers over the course of his 35 years. Our first winemaker was Michael Havens. You were making a comment about the Merlot. He was a big proponent of Merlot, and so we've kind of crafted our blend in his style. And then Ken Bernards, who now owns Ancien, was our winemaker from 93 to 97, and then Sal Diani took the helm in 97, and he's been with us since, so he's almost been with us for 25 years.
Got a couple there that's tenured, like, a long time.
We have a lot of tenured employees, both at the winery and in the vineyard. We have a few people that have been with us over 30 years, so.
That's incredible. As I look at these three wines here, the first one, I made a comment that it was about 14%. It was 14.1. Pinot 14.1, Cab 14.2. It looks like he's kind of aiming for a certain mark.
Yeah.
Is that his style, or is that something that you look for as a winery?
No, I think it's more his style. I mean, everybody always talks about balance in wine, and it's kind of like, they talk about fruit and acidity and tannin, but alcohol is part of that balance. Like, I mean, it's a textural thing. Like, somebody was trying to, not the non-alcoholic wines, but it's hard to make good ones because alcohol is a component in the flavor of the wine. Not only does it uplift the things, but it also gives you a textural component. And our winemaker feels like, with that, the acidity and fruit balance, that's right. There's not like a right changing thing. And it's also just what we feel is optimal ripeness. We sell to some wineries that, make 15.5% alcohol wines, and they pick later. And you're getting flavors that are a little bit more on the jammy, opulent side.
Right.
And that's their style, and we're happy to grow the grapes for them. But for us, we want the wines to have a little more freshness to them. And, because we have sunshine, our sugar levels are going to get higher, which translates into those.
Right. I very much appreciate that 14 mark. I'm someone who, maybe it's because I'm a Floridian and it's hotter than hell here, but I don't like those big alcohol wines. And that seems to kind of be the trend now, that people are gravitating towards out of California. You see a lot of these really big wines, 15, 15 and a half, 16% sometimes. They're massive wines. And on a Pinot, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. These, I think, are very perfectly balanced. And again, like I said, with the Chardonnay, it's a very nice balance between Old World versus New World. And I think that has a lot to do with where you're at and, like you said, the style that you're aiming for.
I love the style of this cab.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a home run for me.
No, thank you.
This is
thank
the
you.
Style that I like. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, like you said, like something can be totally over the top. This sits right in that perfect, you know, point of like, this is what I want to have for dinner with my food. This is what I want to have when dinner's over and just sipping and sitting around and talking and, you know, whatever it might be. It's not over the top, and that's where I like my wines. Yeah. Right in the middle.
Yeah, and that's a location thing. It's like when you go up Valley, you're going to get these really kind of rich, opulent wines. And down in Canarias, it's always going to be much more about elegance and finesse. I mean, we do have sunshine, so ripening's not a problem, but we're not, yeah. We aren't going to be able to make the, we can get up to 15.5, but, you know, 16% alcohols aren't going to come out of Canarias unless we start fortification or something.
Or you have to leave them on the vine till November or something.
Well, yeah, I know. We do a little bit deeper down. I sometimes sit out there until November.
Does I'm it like, really
I swear
yet?
To God. There's more grapes than leaves. The leaves are already falling off the vine, and you see the grapes, and you're like, okay, it's time to pick before you. We're not going to make ice wine here. But it's fun. It's been fun.
Who's how long have you guys been growing the Roussan to bring it back to that?
Yeah, I know. You're,
I love it. I'm so interested. The Roussan that I've seen out of California, a lot of it comes out of like the Paso region.
Yeah,
like,
and we got our cuttings from Tomless Creek in the Paso region.
Did you really? That's amazing. Yeah. We love those guys.
Yeah, no, they're great, and they've been fun to work with. And, you know, so a shout out to Tomless. Like, I'm not a member of many wine clubs because we obviously make wine, but right. I love their wine, so I actually am part of their wine club.
I'm a huge fan of their wine. It's so funny. I'm getting ready to start doing wine education here, and the first one out the gate, and everyone, because as Psalms, you know, people tend to stick their nose up the Paso, and I love it. My first one out the gate Paso.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, they're on that cooler side of Paso. And
the Adelita district, and Jason Haas.
Jason is
well,
like,
he's
great. Yeah, he's so good. And the whole idea of what they're trying to do with, you know, giving it back to the land, and, you know, that. Regenerative farming.
So like I said, I enjoy their wines too. But we got the cuttings from Tomless Creek, but it's kind of, you know, to make a short story longer, we actually started growing Syrah in the late 80s because we were, you know, before you plant vines, you rip the property, meaning you dig up with a tractor down 3-4 feet to break up the soil so that the young vines have a space to grow, because if you just planted vine, it'd be like putting it in a pot. They would never grow anywhere, and so they'd be stunted for their whole lives. So you kind of break up the ground so that they have a nice start to life. And when we were digging up, breaking up this hillside, it all was rocks that came up, and we were like, wow, that's different. We didn't really think about a fault through the property. It was just different soils than we're used to. Everything else has been clay. And one of our distributors, actually from Florida, came out and was like, wow, you know, we were just in Cote Rôti. This looks just like Cote Rôti. And this is the 80s, and we weren't as sophisticated as wine. My dad's kind of like, what's Cote Rôti? Like, I mean, we knew it, but it was like, what do they grow there? And they're like, Syrah. Like, Syrah in the 80s was not that well known. And so we're like, well, we get a couple bottles of Cote Rôti. We're like, this stuff's pretty good. Let's plant some Syrah. So we did. Syrah, we had a great reputation for it. It grew really well. And then, you know, 10 years later, we're like, well, let's go plant a white to complement the Syrah. And so it was kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. We tasted, you know, the Marsans, Roussans, and Viogniers. And some of the Viogniers out of California can get a little over the top. You know, they have this really perfumey thing. And, you know, we were talking about our wines are definitely more about elegance and restraint. So we're kind of like, you know what, that doesn't really fit our style, our profile. It's just, you know, there's some great Viogniers out there, but it's a little bit over the top for us. And then the Marsans tend to be a little too delicate and, like, not enough structure and, like, you know, grip or backbone. And then we tasted the Roussans and we're like, oh, this is, like, just perfect. So, we planted 3 acres of Roussan in 98, and it's actually the first 4 or 5 years, it was one of the hardest grapes for us to sell because nobody knew what the hell it was. like, we were just doing it as a passion project, which was not a very good business decision. But then in around 2005, 2000, and we started drinking it because we weren't selling it. We're just like, well, we're going to drink it. And then about 2005, 2006, the wine world really changed. Like, people were looking for those kind of interesting wines. They were looking for things different. And so now it's one of our first wines. We only do about 1,200 cases each year. It's one of our first wines to sell out. And we always tell people we're not sold out, we're drunk out, because we drink half of it ourselves.
That's awesome.
If people wanted to come see you, if our listeners want to come see you guys, is there a tasting room? Is there anywhere where they can go?
Yeah, definitely. If you're at Napa, we're actually really convenient to get to because we're the first winery west of downtown Napa. So we're not on the main drags of like 29 or Silverado Trail, but if you're driving from Napa to downtown Sonoma, which are only about 20, 25 minutes apart, you'll drive right through our property. So we're right west of downtown. Our property actually borders the city limits because that's as far as we could go, and then couldn't buy anything there. Or we couldn't buy it, we couldn't plant it. And yeah, like I said, the one thing, almost all of Napa and Sonoma and probably Paso now is you need an appointment before coming. Yeah. It's not like the old days where you can just show up. COVID kind of changed all that, and since coming back, the wineries like it because they can staff better. It's kind of like a restaurant, you know, they want to know how many people are coming.
Yeah.
And so that you can visit our website or go online and check out that, but I would recommend any winery you go to now, try to make an appointment ahead of time.
Awesome. And social media, everyone's on Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah, no snow pictures from us today, but a lot of wineries are sharing
that. They're sharing a lot of snow pictures.
Well, awesome. Anthony, thank you so much. The wines are great. It's a pleasure to have you, and I'm looking forward to this tasting tonight.
No, Perry and Anthony, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Cheers.